Yafas yichasan shel avdei avos, yosa mitarasan shel bonim. The theme of this week's parsha is a lengthy description of the travails of Eliezer the Eved Avram in his attempt to find an appropriate marriage partner for Yitzchak Avinu. It's told once, Chazal tells us, it's told twice. The whole story repeats, whereas halakas are derived from an extra letter. Perhaps we can suggest an additional nuance. The fact that the Chazal, in commenting upon this, remarked that the story is told twice. So it's told twice. What special nekuda are they bringing out for the fact that it's told twice? The Mefarshim point out that the Sichoson Shel Avdei Avos, although at first glance inconsequential, paling in comparison to a Halacha Pesuka, nonetheless, precisely because it's less rigorous, it's more contextual, it's really a Sichas Musar, that's what it really is. Precisely for this reason, you can't just say it in one sentence. The Torah says, Lo socho kol nevela. Simple. You may not eat nevela. That's all you need. Four words. That's the end. But to convey messages, nuances of ethical behavior, the story has to be told at great length and even repeated. What's so special about the fact that it's repeated? We find that in the repetition there's a deviation from the truth. Rashi comments, what came first, the placing of the jewelry or the identification? In the first story we are taught the placing of the jewelry comes first, Eliezer Bitochen. When he repeats the story based the Suel, he reverses it. And why does he reverse it? Well, the Chazal explained, Rashi quotes a part of it. What do you mean? What, are you crazy? You put the give the jewelry before find out who she is? He was afraid that would, to use a modern expression, stir the shidduch. That would destroy the possibility of this wonderful marriage taking place. Now, at first glance, if you're a Baal Musar, you're an ethicist, you cannot condone this. You can't tell a lie. And all the excuses, it wasn't a total lie. It still is not the truth. What are you doing over here? Eliezer should be condemned for his unethical behavior. Yet, that is not the theme echoed by Chazal. They seem to feel that what Eliezer did was right, and perhaps one can argue that's exactly the point of the Chazal when they say that the story of Avdei Avos was said twice, and there's a contradiction between the two, and at first glance it's horrific, and the Chazal is saying Eliezer did the right thing. But where did he get it from? How did he know that you can do something which is not exactly right on for the purpose of establishing a shidduch? Well, perhaps we can go back to last week's parsha. Vanizokanti. This is how Hashem says to Avram Avinu in describing what Sarah said. Well, what did Sarah really say? Vadoni Zokain. So Chazal say again, Rashi quotes part, that not only is it permissible, Lishanos, to say that not exactly so, for the purpose of Shalom Bayis, for its mitzvah l'shanus. A mitzvah because we're following HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Mahu afato. What happened? Chosomo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes. Emes, truth. The answer is Chosomo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu emes. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows the truth, and he knows that sometimes when a person says, what do we call today? The truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, it's an absolute lie. Because it's causing destruction. And truth is supposed to be, emes is supposed to be the foundation of the world. Now, please, it's not to give anyone license to make up stories and to bend the facts in a manner, b'shrius libo, arbitrarily, based on his own ideas, chas v'shalom. But what we're seeing over here in the behavior of Eliezer in this week's parsha, and I think that's why Chazal are emphasizing Yofes Yichosin, that it had to be repeated at length twice. And we saw already in last week's parsha, in the paradigm, in the example of HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'kvodo v'atzmo, is that how we define ethics is not always the same as it might be defined in the street. We can imagine an ethicist would say, the absolute truth, that's the highest value, no bending it, no omitting it, nothing. And if a family breaks up, so what? So what? I'm discussing this for a particular reason. Now, someone gave me something today which I found to be quite interesting. I have it in my pocket. I'm not as good as I should be, perhaps, with reading the newspapers. But apparently, there is an ethicist, name is Cohen yet. No relation, I presume. An ethicist who has a column in the New York Times magazine section. The ethicist. Tell you the truth, the title is somewhat presumptuous. It's maybe like Baal Musa. Imagine Baal Musa. Yeah, okay. That's it. Let me ask, it's a Shailas and Chuvas. Not a shoot, a Shailas and Chuvas. Shailas and Chuvas, the ethicist. Simon, Tuff, Kuf. Okay. Listen to the Shailas. Well, that's a Shailas. Shailas Chacham. The courteous and competent real estate agent I just hired to rent my house shocked and offended me when, after we signed our contract, he refused to shake my hand, saying that as an Orthodox Jew, he did not touch women. As a feminist, I oppose sex discrimination of all sorts. However, I also support freedom of religious expression. How do I balance these conflicting values? Should I tear up our contract? Shailas Chacham. So you have, who do you go to? You go to the ethicist. Tshuva. I believe you should tear up your contract. The line of tshuva, but I'll read you some of the key lines. Had he declined to shake hands with everyone, there'd be no problem. What he may not do, however, is render a class of people untouchable. Were he, say, an airline ticket clerk who refused to touch Asian Americans, he would find himself in hot water, and rightly so. Bias on the basis of sex is equally discreditable. As I write it, I mean. Next paragraph. The last one I'm going to read. Some religions that assign men and women distinct spheres argue that while these two spheres are different, neither is inferior to the other. Oh, this is the A Lima, right? It isn't. This sort of reasoning was rejected. It's a quote of Paisik, Harishin, and Acharon. Who are you going to quote? In 1954. What's the Igris Moshe? What did we quote in 1954? In the great school desegregation case, Brown versus Board of Education, when the Supreme Court declared that separate is by its very nature unequal. That's a pretty good ethical guideline for ordinary life. Calling an offensive action religious doesn't make it right. Ad kan, the truth. So now let's analyze the truth. What if you want to have, I think we're guilty in this yeshiva. How so? I walked by before, I saw two separate bathrooms. One said men, and one said women. Separate but equal is inherently unequal. Maybe they'll bring the case to the courts. Separate but equal. Good kasha. But it doesn't bother the ethicist. The ethicist is not moved by this question. Because you see, there's another overriding principle. As the Shoel identified herself as a feminist, that has to go, that's it. That's the highest value. Absolute equality. No changes whatsoever. Why am I mentioning this Shiloh Tshuva here in this place of Medrash? Because whether we know it or not, we are subjected sometimes subliminally, sometimes explicitly, to other value systems. And when we cling to what we consider to be the Torah value system, we are sometimes derided, much in the same way as the ethicist articulated the position in the New York Times. And we have to strengthen ourselves, because Gedolim V'Tovim, people who mean very well, we'll call them ethical people, I mean in the positive sense, they just have their own rules of ethics, which are here today and gone tomorrow, and based on the particular fad of ethical behavior of that particular year, decade, generation, century, if you stray, then you're unethical. You're no good. We suffer from it here within this university. Many of you may know that Yeshiva University was sued not long ago because of certain decisions it made in housing policy, in which it established an incredible institution as being determinant. The same institution because of which our rabbis have taught, based on the paradigm of Hashem himself, one may say something which is not quite the truth. The institution is called marriage. We view marriage as something very, very sacred, critical, and determinant. You want to bring someone else into your apartment, which the university provides for you, someone who is not himself or herself enrolled in the program,
we have only one precondition. Marriage. The person is married to you, fine. Otherwise, not.
Well, this was challenged. Unfair, it's unethical. What if it's a different kind of a partnership? Two men, two women. What do you mean, a business partnership? So we can live somewhere else. No, I mean a different kind of a partnership. Can't live somewhere else.
Why should we be penalized just because this yeshiva university is attempting to maintain antiquated principles?
Articulated in Leviticus,
which prohibits homosexuality. That's ridiculous. They're mature, responsible, consenting adults, and they can do whatever they want.
And if they can't get married, it's only because New York State is behind the times.
Give them a few more years.
And do you know that for a variety of reasons, this policy was implemented? The lawsuit brought against our yeshiva was a de facto success, without going into the intricacies. I'm sure much to the pleasure of the ethicists. Yes, we believe in ethics. We call it Musar. But our Musar is Musar which comes from the Rabbonu Shel Olam, which comes from Torah-Seinu HaKadosha. And the fact that we are bombarded throughout the world and even within our own institution with a whole series, a whole variety of other conflicting principles which go by the name ethics should not deter us. And if there's somebody in this room who feels that what the courteous and competent real estate broker did was right, and that touching a woman is against halacha, and in whatever place of work, or even whatever shul, or whatever school you may be, they give you a look, you're some kind of a fanatic, a chnyok and a fromak, and it's not right, and they'll start throwing at you. Well, I know they always throw at you, the same thing. Ephesus doesn't know about this one. Chil Hashem! Chil Hashem! That's the way that certain ethicists who have a title orthodox try to use the same trick as this ethicist used. Chil Hashem! Why did Chil Hashem? Well, it depends where you start. After all, there's a woman and she's upset that you're not shaking her hand. He calls it unethical. And someone else called a Chil Hashem. They're trying to get you, you know, with terms that they think are going to resonate. Now, the halacha does certainly take into account other people's feelings, no question about it. And I'm not passing any shilas here whatsoever. All I'm saying is, if a person has a psak halacha, which he considers to be correct, the fact that others will deride the psak based on ethics, or what they consider Chil Hashem, which others might say is exactly the other way around. It's a Kiddush Hashem, that a person is willing to stand up for his principles. You want to wear a yarmulke somewhere, and they say, ooh, you can't wear a yarmulke, it's a Chil Hashem. What means a Chil Hashem? It means the guy before you didn't wear a yarmulke, so if you wear a yarmulke, you're showing him up. I'm trying to Chil Hashem. Stick with your principles. Because your principles, the Torah's principles, as correctly determined, you have a shali ask by a rav. But whatever the Torah's principles are, that is what ethics really is. Because ethics come from Sinai. We should be zoche to understand that this is what a sichas musar was all about. That the musar is the musar ha-Torah.